Renee Brussel, and this is tape number 364, and it's side two, November 24th, 1978. It might seem strange to you that this is the anniversary this week of the death of John Kennedy, which I mentioned on the other side of the tape, the 15th anniversary of his death, and instead of talking about John Kennedy, I'm talking about the Pope. The series of popes and the political use of the Vatican for the warfare state or for the control of the economy in buying large hunks of stocks, and then they can always threaten to pull it out if we don't move in a certain direction that protects the interests of the Catholic Church and the economy, the Wall Street gang, the Bohemian Grove, the crowd that Dumhoff writes about in Who Rules America, can also order the Pope to move in certain political directions, or the Curia to vote for a certain pope who will serve the best interests of the people who control the money that they've invested, so that they have this double relationship going now of investing overseas into the multinational corporations, and what was once a religious institution becomes a big investment. There was a big investment before in maintaining the form that the Catholic Church has, but as it is falling apart and people no longer want to go along with all the dogma, the priests may want to get married, women may want to be priests, they want to use contraceptives, the nuns don't want to wear their habits, the economy puts the pressure upon them to fall into line or else. And when you read the Gemstone Files, which I'm going to refer to in a few minutes, if we have time on this tape, Bruce Roberts gave me those papers. Most of you have the summary of them that was printed, the 20-page summary. But in the entire Gemstone Files, which is 30 pages long, Bruce Roberts talks about private telephone conversation that took place September the 2nd, 1978, a long-distance call that had to do with investigating the death of Howard Hughes, which Bruce Roberts maintains took place in 71, and I believe him. And he talks about the Tisserand papers and the murder of Pope Pius XI, and that in Montini's vault is a document called The Summit of the Church, which has to do with the Vatican Church and the Mafia. And the Gemstone papers are filled with references to Montini, the Pope that we're talking about here, who decided the Polish Pope would be selected, the Germans and Montini and the conservative cardinals decided that the Polish Pope would be the one that was elected, and that is important because sandwiched in between, this other fine person had to die. But the thread of Onassis, then he goes in the Gemstone Files into Aristotle Onassis and Montini and the Vatican, and of course we make a cycle to Jackie Onassis. I'm not making those connections in this tape. But the story of the Vatican is very important to the John Kennedy assassination. I have mentioned it before that Montini, I read on the other side of this tape, wrote the passport for Martin Bormann and other Nazis, and now there's a book out in London that I've referred to again in the past, and Treason is My Daily Bread, saying that Martin Bormann hired a specific gunman that did the fatal headshot for John Kennedy. So you can't get closer to the political clout of the Vatican than that. And I think that just to talk about the death of John Kennedy this week, I've expressed my feelings in doing 15 years' work into the assassination. I've dedicated endless hours and time and money and spirit. That's the main thing. You can't pay people to do the kind of work that the researchers are doing, the serious researchers into the assassinations. You have to love it, and you have to believe in it, and you have to hate fascism. And in doing that, that's a living memorial. So I don't think on the 15th anniversary of his death that I have too much to say on that, and we'll get back to the Vatican. As I said before, Pope Paul VI, with his advisors, and we don't know who his advisors are, whether they are Reinhard Gehlen and the CIA intelligence group that he was meeting with in Milan when he was, in quotes, in exile, his Milan Mafia that kept him apart from the Roman clique. He had these advisors. They decided to go foreign, put their money in other places and sent Mr. Sindona, as of 1969, out on the road with the Vatican cash. And Mr. Sindona was very close to Swiss authorities, Swiss banks, and the story is that he began to feel financial losses, that he invested it in the wrong places, and that the money was lost. And the story of Sindona was in the newspapers, the Franklin Bank in New York City. There was quite a scandal that the money from the Vatican, several billion dollars, was badly invested. But I know in espionage operations, what they call a bank robbery is sometimes a giveaway. There was the bank robbery in Nice where a gentleman, a far-right gentleman, a rightist, supposed to be a mole, dug holes out underneath, and later they caught him. He'd gotten millions of dollars, and they caught him, and he was in the police department in France, and he escaped again from then and said the money was used for far-right organizations, and he's still at large, for all we know. And so I don't believe that what they call the loss necessarily was a loss of money. We won't know for sure, but I don't think that the Vatican necessarily lost that money, but I think there's a chance that they reinvested it over here and wrote it off as a loss with Mr. Sindona, because we really don't know the background of Sindona well enough to know, and Montini, this clique of how they got together, their 20-year reunion of how they got together. And I don't believe the people that were buying blue chips and going around and investing in Swiss banks and overseas in all these different countries actually did lose billions of dollars. In 1972, at the time of Watergate, this is just prior to Watergate, that story broke in June of 72, but Mr. Martin writes in Final Conclave that in 1972, Mr. Sindona transferred his family to the United States, took an apartment in the Pierre Hotel in New York City, and bought controlling interest in the Franklin National Bank, the 20th largest bank in the United States, and offered $1 million as an anonymous election contribution to President Nixon's campaign. Maurice Stans ran the committee to reelect the president, and he offered $1 million from the Vatican, as they call it, an anonymous contribution. Now, this is terribly important because Bruce Roberts does talk in the Gemstone Files about the links of Pope Montini, and Montini is the man who gave all of this money to Mr. Sindona. I want to repeat this because I want it clear that he had a summit of the church meeting with the mafia, and that the allegation of Bruce Roberts was that Montini and Aristotle Onassis had built up a golden triangle, that joint Marseille heroin combine, and that Montini and Onassis were part of it. And they were pushing the CIA into, they didn't have to push them very far, but they took over in Southeast Asia, where the French had left off. When the French left, the American CIA then took over with the blessings of Onassis and Pope Paul VI. Those are the allegations of Bruce Roberts. But Mr. Sindona says in the Final Conclave that they not only bought the Watergate Hotel, which we knew George Seldes wrote it in 1968, but had offered $1 million of anonymous money. Now, the only reason he can say that this was anonymous money is, if you remember carefully, the night of the arrest of Watergate Hotel, June 17th, 1972, John Mitchell and the hierarchy of the Republican Party were out in California at the Beverly Hills Hotel, then moved down to La Costa. But the hierarchy gave orders, and all night, Maurice Stans and G. Gordon Liddy and the secretaries there at the committee to reelect the president had shredding machines, and they proceeded to burn or shred every single paper that was in the office of Maurice Stans that gave a record of how he was paid to reelect the president of the United States. And the committee to reelect the president used their shredders. Nobody was charged. Sally Harmony or any of the others were charged with destroying evidence in a criminal case. Men had been arrested at the Watergate. And the next day, they shredded the papers. And the papers were called the Gemstone Papers. This is common knowledge that the Watergate papers were called the Gemstone Papers. And it was after the shredding of the papers and after I got out my article on the Watergate, and I think it's because I was the first published article in the world making the connections of this conspiratorial team. I got a letter that I've referred to often by Andreas Papandreou saying, finally, somebody's making the connections from Greece. And Bruce Roberts, then, knowing that I was making these connections, gave me the entire gemstone file. I have a copy, several copies made, out of the city, one out of the country, and I don't know who else has the whole complete gemstone file, unless it's his mother or his immediate family. But in the gemstone file, it goes into Pope Montini and Aristotle Onassis. And I think this is interesting because Jacqueline Kennedy had gone on and married Aristotle Onassis, the widow of John Kennedy. And the gemstone papers were what was burned, shredded, I keep saying burned, at the office of the Committee to Reelect the President. And the gemstone papers, according to Bruce Roberts, were the links of the Pope, Pope Paul VI, who was former Cardinal Montini. Again, this cycle, linked to the Kennedy assassination, his buddy that he got out of Germany, and many others, too. I'm just naming one particular one because Martin Bormann is the most famous one. But what was going to happen with Marine Stans and this money? What I maintained then and maintain now, and I didn't think it originally, it was Lewis Tacklin who first turned me on to it, was the fact that after Nixon was elected, a Greek, again, Aristotle Onassis went entirely along with the Greek military junta, helped overthrow Greece, a Greek by the name of Spyro Agnew would become president because he was the vice president, and if Nixon was killed as planned down originally in San Diego, or then when that was called off, that Squad 19, he would be killed by Mr. Topping in the White House. That murder plan has been concealed for the major media, and someday I'll probably just have to do a story on the plans to kill Nixon in 72. Because we talked about the death of a pope last week, and here the appointment secretary, Dwight Chapin, had arranged, and all they had to do was a clearance through the Secret Service. And I wrote and said many times on the radio and radio shows before that the reason the murder of Nixon was called off, the Topping murder of Richard Nixon, the act to make Spyro Agnew president, the reason it was called off was that it would be linked to the money at Watergate, the Marie Stans money, which again comes in from Gulf and Western, which the Vatican had invested in, and the Vatican now can say that they offered this money that was turned down as an anonymous. But the fact that the records were burned and Marie Stans destroyed every piece of paper, we will never know, and I'm sure that the Vatican did put in money as an effort to make Spyro Agnew the president of the United States. You see, this is the way those millions of dollars work invested in the United States that weren't just in Rome property. If the Vatican keeps their money in the Rome, in the city of Rome, in railroads or factories or even making contraceptives, whatever they're doing, they can't affect the American economy except to tell their people to vote no in a communist election, give them $80,000, as we mentioned, because this is a sin, or give pay the Pope off for another decree, and he gives the orders on down to these millions of innocent Catholics who are taking this and listening and hoping that he's telling or believing that they're always telling the truth. But when you bring all that money by the mysterious Mr. Sindona from Sicily, with the Mormon mafia combined with the Catholic Church. Watergate was a Christian, not a Catholic activity. Most of it was Mormon mafia with Catholic investment. What you really get is the moving of the Vatican money into the Wall Street Protestant gang. Now, this is a concept I believe happened based upon many, many years of research. You have to rethink your thinking now because I'm giving you a hard question to think about in terms of new ideas. Sometimes we plow along with certain facts of who got this person out of Germany, where is Oswald's double. We work on the details of did Jack Ruby go to the office of H.L. Hunt on Saturday afternoon. Those are minute details, but sometimes we work on grander plans based upon an accumulation of facts, and the facts in this case, the funding, the mass investment of the Vatican and the effect they would have on our elections. You see, if Spyro Agnew is in, or if they fund money to the Jimmy Carter campaign, or if the Vatican money is in Shell and they can influence psychologically former Nazis like Reinhard Gehlen working with the head of IG Farben. If Prince Bernhard was a director of IG Farben, if IG Farben has a chemical plant in Poland, if this Pope Carol worked at a chemical plant from the time he was 19 to 26 and then goes to Rome with Montini from when he's 26 years old, the years 1946 to 48, you can see a relationship, not just on one or two or three, 4-hour tapes, but take the total picture. When the men were caught at the Watergate Hotel, that pushed Richard Nixon out. He immediately pulled the rug out from under Spiro Agnew and sent him right out to Palm Springs. Agnew works around with the Middle East oil people now, with Tom Charles Houston, who set up the entire counterintelligence operation for the United States. If Agnew had been in, and the Pentagon and Tom Charles Houston were in, the Gestapo, as James McCord would say, was total. That's why McCord told Judge Sirica, I'm going to break this case because the FBI is lying and the Justice Department is covering up, the president isn't telling the truth, and if I don't, we'll have a Gestapo. And the Gestapo was Spiro Agnew and Tom Charles Houston from Indiana. And incidentally, our fine Reverend Jones came from Indiana, and the story of his route there is also yet to be explored, and we'll do more, hopefully, on the background of Reverend Jones, what he was doing in Indiana next week, and the connections of Mark Lane. But the point is that in this book, when they talk about Sedona making the move to New York City, to the Pierre Hotel, I have to look up my research now on Martha Mitchell and see where she stayed when she was kidnapped, because I believe it was a hotel owned, I know it was owned by the Marriotts, and I have to check that out because I believe it was the Pierre Hotel. I want to get this tape done today and get it out in the mail to you, so I'm going to check that out for you over the weekend. But it just came to my mind that I think the Marriott stayed at the Pierre Hotel in 1972. That mysterious Mr. Sedona comes to California, comes to New York, rather, to the United States, just prior to the action at the Watergate Hotel that would remove the president, make Rockefeller vice president. Jerry Ford was always their tool. He was on the Warren Commission representing the Wall Street combines and the Bilderberger Council Foreign Relations Group. In fact, I mentioned he was at the Bilderberger meeting in 1964 in the United States at the time he was still on the Warren Commission in March of 64. Well, in the final conclave, I'm going to read again. Mr. Martin says, Cardinal Viot, and to remind you again, that is the French cardinal, the last person with the current Pope John that just died. And he was the last one, according to the media, with him before he went to bed, the first to say those prayers when he was dead. Cardinal Viot told Pope Paul VI, Montini, about Sedona's dealings in the United States. Paul's memory was stirred with an age-old unease. Had he involved the church more than ever with the power of this world? That is in this book, The Final Conclave. He begins to wonder, did he involve them? My answer is, oh, how would he ever get that idea? Once you release a nest of the Odessa, the Spider, the war criminals, knowing that they want World War III, that they want Nazism all over the world, and you build up this financial empire of the Vatican's that they accumulated from World War I up to 1969 at the heat of 1969 was the year also of Tom Charles Houston forming the counterintelligence Gestapo in the United States, combining the FBI, CIA, National Security Agency, and the Pentagon, taking over the intelligence gathering, combining in the United States under the guidance of an admiral. In 1969, Montini is turning over the Vatican fortune that has accumulated through investments and other investments and financial fronts, and working closely with the Wall Street gang now. How could he believe in 1972 that he's involving the Vatican more than ever in the power of this world? The only beef I have about the final conclave, and I mentioned before, is that Mr. Martin puts a halo around Montini. He doesn't see these conspiratorial angles, but I think if you take every year of Montini's life and Sedona's life and overlay them to what was going on with the mafia and the military and the United States Wall Street gang, you'd see that Montini is not the little angel that he talks about. Now, he goes into the fact that Sindona in the United States begins to lose money, in quotes, for the Vatican. He's supposed to lose 48 million in 1973, 150 million in 74, 43 million from the Franklin National Bank. He lost money in controlled Swiss banks. And by January the 9th, 1975, he allegedly lost $240 million of Vatican money. And I ask again the question, was it really lost or was it invested? Was it put into this Permandex? Remember the network of Permandex that has been credited to Credit Suisse, the assassination teams, and the also Permandex is mentioned in the National Labor Caucus newspaper. I don't agree with a lot of their conclusions, but some of their facts are very interesting, and they cite Credit Suisse and Permandex as killing Aldo Moro, the very man who wanted to tax the Vatican in 1968 as premier of Italy, that they were responsible for funding the terrorist group that killed Aldo Moro. So Permandex is still active with assassination teams if their information is true. And when they say that he lost $250 million, did they really lose that, or did that come over here to put up money, more clout for people like Brzezinski, Solzhenitsyn, the dissidents traveling, the dissidents' wives around, the lectures, the media, getting books out about them, writers? Was this money used to further this violent anti-Marxist propaganda? Even going back now, I'm not going to tell you too much about next week's tape, but on the radio shows on KGO this week, they were calling in about Guyana being a Marxist country and a stronghold of Marxism, and you get cruelty in a Marxist country, and why would people commit suicide? They're down in a Marxist country. And you begin to hear that over and over, and while there were 300 to 400 deaths down there, maybe even more, they never talk about how many have died for the church. And even Pope John Paul II in his first speech says, be prepared to die for Christ. And I assure you, he's going to kill more than 400 people. There are more than 400 people dying for Christ for some crazy reason, killing today, believing in Christ, joining Nazi groups, spreading hatred, getting ready to kill, buying their uniforms and armbands, marching, having their beer hall parties, and killing over in Germany. There are a lot of altercations, street altercations, race wars for Christ. There's more than 400 people that will die for Christ in the next 3 months. And yet the attention is directed on Reverend Jones. That doesn't justify what went on there. But they act as if nobody ever died for a church or belief, whereas this church advocates going out and killing for Christ, actually condones it, and Cardinal Cushing, a warfare cardinal, was just pushing for a total wipeout of the Asian population down in Vietnam to make ready for the white oil dealers and the dope dealers to take over from the native population. I just go into this because there's a lot of floating money going around here for dope and killing and selecting candidates. It takes a lot of money to kill a Pope John Paul I and get away with it. And it takes a lot of money to get all the cardinals to put in a man that was selected 3 years ago and get away with it. It takes a lot of heavy clout. It isn't the kind, you don't buy a pope by handing Cardinal Vio or Cardinal Sarah, various cardinals, an envelope with a certain amount of money for each one, because that isn't what you do and it isn't what they need. But you spend money sending Cardinal, this when he was Carol from Poland, you send him to the United States, and you have an entourage and a tour and the publicity and the engagements, and you have him travel to all the highest, every cardinal that has real clout in this country, if not everyone in the United States, and visit with them and let the people get to know them and make their appearances, so that when the voting comes in and they are selected like he was selected, then everyone feels like they know him. They have a piece of the action. He's been to Buffalo, and he's been to Detroit and Chicago and Cincinnati and San Francisco and Washington and New York, and everybody loves him because nobody else got the travel money, got the exposure, spent the time there. He's invited to teach a class at Georgetown. When I talked about the Pope for 1 minute on KGO radio, somebody gets furious. Another letter that somebody got besides the one I read you last week, they sent me an article. This Pope John Paul II was in San Francisco. How can you talk about him? He was in San Francisco, and they feel that they've invested a piece of the action their heart is in him because he's been to their city, this holy man. And that's the way the investment goes, so that this hidden money that Mr. Sindona had, he could have just transferred it to the powers that be over here and told the Vatican it was lost. And of course Montini doesn't have to grieve too much, because then he just reaches in the pocket and $250 million wouldn't be a loss for the Vatican anyway. Martin goes on that Pope Paul VI put the institutional and hieratic church into a link. He said it was chained then to an international monetary system that belonged in principle and practice to the spirit of what he calls, in quotes, the prince of the world. Two things were certain about Pope Paul VI's venture with Michel Sindona, according to the final conclave. He wished to align the Vatican and church finances with United States interests, and he wanted to detach the church in Europe with its involvement in the ancient heartland, where it occupied a predominant position since early Roman times. Montini, as I said, was not a Roman. He was an outsider. He had been sent away in exile at one point, and Mr. Sindona from Sicily and Montini did align the church with United States interests, and the United States interests are to have a Polish pope to needle Russia to arouse the Catholics inside the Iron Curtain. It was a stroke of genius. I'm sure it took a lot of money, and it took as much planning from 1969 when this marriage of finances went on. It took a lot of money and a lot of planning, and they got what they wanted in the end. On December the 8th, 1965, at the end of 4 years ecumenical Vatican Council, there was a French Archbishop, Marcel Lefebvre, and maybe you've been reading about him in the paper. He said the Vatican Council was hijacked by bishops and theologians. He didn't like what was going on. He said they were acting in a spirit of Protestantism and neo-modernism. Now, did he have suspicions in 65 of what Montini was doing? He separated himself. He didn't like what Montini was doing as Pope Paul VI. Now, some interpretations are that Mr. Lefebvre was just too radical on the right, and that Pope Paul VI was the moderate. But I don't believe that was true. Montini, according to this book, and you can see it, it's all laid out for you, how they handpick and select and jockey the next pope and put them into position. Montini selected this Pope Paul II from John Paul II from Poland. And as soon as he was in, Lefebvre got together with him just this week. The arch-conservatives of the Vatican, the bloc, I guess, the 20 that wouldn't vote for Pope John Paul I, that gentleman, that was able to live 33 days as pope in the Vatican. These arch-conservatives will now meet with John Paul II, and they made their first overtures just this week, 2 days ago. Lefebvre, you'll read about him, the arch-conservative, who disassociated with himself for any new changes that would take place, and he held out for the old guard to come in. And while it looked like Montini was making overtures to what they call the Third World, every country that he was reaching out to is fascist. The only socialist country, they said, they were talking about Ghana as being socialist, and it was put in by the CIA. That government was actually put in by the CIA. But those cardinals he works with from Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, Chile, there's no socialism going on down there. And it's just a real pure, unadulterated Nazi takeover. The people are literal slaves. The Indian populations are being wiped out. There's genocide down there. And in Nicaragua and Guatemala and Central America and Costa Rica and all of these Catholic countries. And the story is that Montini maybe got too liberal, but what he was doing was accumulating this wealth and giving it to Sindona, who then invested it in the United States. And this is a very, very dangerous situation. Martin goes on in the book that says Mr. Cardinal Villot, who was very close to Montini, warned Pope Paul VI that Lefebvre must be suppressed. But yet it was Villot who took over the Vatican when Montini died till a new pope came in. And when he was buried, he came in with his full conservative power And now I'm sure that Viaud will be very close to Pope John Paul II, and all the conservatives will have what they want, because now we can keep beating that story of the Marxism and the dangers and evils of Satan as against being Christ-like and loving God. Final Conclave has chapters on how Pope Montini, Pope Paul VI, wanted to select the next pope. It goes into the fact that the next pope would be a non-European. He tells how the United States cardinals made plans to form their alliance with the Polish and German cardinals. There's a chapter on the pre-conclave activity and the campaigning in the Vatican, on the American initiative with the American cardinals deep in political clout. For the first time in conclave history, the American cardinals are into the Vatican politics in a deep sense. I mean, we always worked with the Vatican, but this book, published in 1978, said how we would help influence the cardinals to select their next pope. And when the pope came in that they didn't want, the American businessmen and the arch-conservatives, they could kill him and then get the pope that they do want.